I gave a presentation just 10 days ago at one of Singapore's leading schools to teachers. It was their kind of a work day for staff development. And I was talking about disciplinarity and the role that it plays. In fact, one of the core findings that we have out of the research in Singapore is that while education and the system in Singapore has been extremely successful in terms of international assessments, TIMSS, for example, our evidence suggests that teachers have a modest understanding of the content in terms of a disciplinary framework, modest at best, and that one of the major challenges of the Singapore system is how to deepen the disciplinarity of the content knowledge of teachers in the schools and in the pre-service program. And I, at the very end of the presentation, a teacher got up from the English department and said to me, "We believe everything that you've said, but we don't have our own, our education didn't prepare us to think about our academic content areas in disciplinary terms." And I think that's an issue, and it's an issue that I'm going to come back to at the end. So what is a discipline? A discipline is a public, coherent, and integrated, if contested, body of knowledge, facts, concepts, propositions, relationships, arguments, models, theorems, and understandings, procedures, skills, and dispositions that focus on the explanation, prediction, interpretation, representation, or control of some aspect of human experience or of the natural world, the social world, or ourselves. Now, that's just a kind of a pragmatic definition. There's a definition that has been offered by Michael Oakeshott, who is an English philosopher who wrote about education in the 1960s. He's now dead. Politically, he's very different. He comes from a very different kind of school of thought than I do. But I have found this metaphor immensely powerful over the years that I have been teaching. So the way we think about disciplines is to think of them as public conversations about the nature of nature, about the nature of our social experience, about the nature of our own human experience of ourselves. And that education is not the transmission of canonical understandings or bits and pieces of these conversations, but an initiation into those conversations so that you can participate in them. That's the fundamental, for all, the first principle of justice. And secondly, it has to be consistent with democratic social reproduction. That is, it has to be consistent with liberal democratic principles that we can govern ourselves and we need to have institutions that allow us to govern ourselves. So, this is John Rawls before he died. And then I want to turn to some curriculum design principles, and particularly the principle of disciplinarity and transdisciplinarity. Now, I know Peter has, and I believe Rob Gilbert as well, talked about this in their presentation, so I'm not going to say much about transdisciplinarity other than to sort of flag its importance. I want to focus on disciplinarity. And I want to draw a distinction between academic subjects and disciplines. Now, they're not the same. They are different. They have a very intimate relationship. They have a long historical relationship. But academic subjects, the kinds of things that get taught in schools, whether it be history or maths or woodwork, vary immensely in the degree of disciplinarity that are embedded in the organisation of the knowledge that's transmitted in the curriculum. And it's reflected as well in variations in the degree of disciplinarity of curriculum units and in teacher capacities. Teachers vary in the degree of understanding that they have of the disciplinarity of their subject matter. I gave a presentation just 10 days ago at one of Singapore's leading schools to teachers. It was their kind of a work day for staff development. And I was talking about disciplinarity and the role that it plays. In fact, one of the core findings that we have out of the research in Singapore is that while education and the system in Singapore has been extremely successful in terms of international assessments, TIMSS, for example, our evidence suggests that teachers have a modest understanding of their content in terms of a disciplinary framework, modest at best, and that one of the major challenges of the Singapore system is how to deepen the disciplinarity of the content knowledge of teachers in the schools and in the pre-service program. And I, at the very end of the presentation, a teacher got up from the English department and said to me, "We believe everything that you've said, but we don't have our own, our education didn't prepare us to think about our academic content areas in disciplinary terms." And I think that's an issue, and it's an issue that I'm going to come back to at the end. So what is a discipline? A discipline is a public, coherent and integrated, if contested, body of knowledge, facts, concepts, propositions, relationships, arguments, models, theorems, and understandings, procedures, skills and dispositions that focus on the explanation, prediction, interpretation, representation or control of some aspect of human experience or of the natural world, the social world, or ourselves. Now that's just a kind of a pragmatic definition. There's a definition that has been offered by Michael Oakeshott, who is an English philosopher who wrote about education in the 1960s. He's now dead. Politically, he's very different. He comes from a very different kind of school of thought than I do. But I have found this metaphor immensely powerful over the years that I have been teaching. So the way we think about disciplines is to think of them as public conversations about the nature of nature, about the nature of our social experience, about the nature of our own human experience of ourselves. And that education is not the transmission of canonical understandings or bits and pieces of these conversations, but an initiation into those conversations so that you can participate in them. It's about participation. It's an angelic notion of participating in these long conversations about the nature of human experience. For me, that's a very powerful metaphor because it goes back to that idea that education is critically about framing the good. For each student themselves to frame the good. And for that, they need to have access and to participate in these disciplinary conversations. It also has to be about knowledge and action. Not knowledge of action in out of context, but knowledge in action of doing things. It's not about knowing what woodworkers do or what lawyers do or what historians do, but doing history. It's about doing English crit. It's about doing science. It's about knowledge in action and applying it to the real world. So that, I think, collapses the distinction between academic and vocational education. This is a statement from Wiggins and McTighe. Wiggins and McTighe are two US curriculum assessment specialists who've had a huge impact in the United States in the last 4 or 5 years and are now having a very big impact in Singapore because it's a very powerful meta-pedagogical framework for thinking about the nature of the relationships between curriculum, assessment and instructional practice. And the heart of their book is a concept of understanding. And it's a profoundly disciplinary notion of understanding. And they define understanding as to making connections and binding together our knowledge in something that makes sense of things, whereas without understanding we might see only unclear, isolated or unhelpful facts. But the world also implies doing, not just a mental act. A performative ability lies at the heart of understanding. To understand is to be able to wisely and effectively use or transfer what we know in context, to apply knowledge and skill effectively in realistic tasks and settings. To have understanding means that we show evidence of being able to transfer what we know. When we understand, we have a fluent and fluid grasp, not a rigid, formulaic grasp based only on recall and plugging in. What they're trying to get at is that education is not about memorizing silos of information or data or propositions in history, in English, in physics, in mathematics. It's about understanding those propositions, that knowledge, in a conceptual way and being able to apply that to the real world and to use that knowledge effectively, productively, generatively in understanding their experience. Okay, this is a framework that they have developed. I don't have the time to pursue this now, but this is a framework they have used in their professional development work in the United States that has been immensely successful and very powerful. It starts off with questions about, you've got to start in curriculum design with the core question, what is worthy and requiring of understanding? Not what's in the syllabus or what's in the textbook well, what do I want to teach today? But it requires a hard-edged question about what's worth knowing. It's about participation. It's an angenic notion of participating in these long conversations about the nature of human experience. For me, that's a very powerful metaphor because it goes back to that idea that education is critically about framing the good. For each student themselves to frame the good, and for that they need to have access and to participate in these disciplinary conversations. It also has to be about knowledge and action. Not knowledge of action in out of context, but knowledge in action, of doing things. It's not about knowing what woodworkers do or what lawyers do or what historians do, but doing history. It's about doing English crit. It's about doing science. It's about knowledge in action and applying it to the real world. So that, I think, collapses the distinction between academic and vocational education. This is a statement from Wiggins and McTighe. Wiggins and McTighe are two US curriculum assessment specialists who've had a huge impact in the United States in the last 4 or 5 years and are now having a very big impact in Singapore because it's a very powerful meta-pedagogical framework for thinking about the nature of the relationships between curriculum, assessment, and instructional practice. And the heart of their book is a concept of understanding. And it's a profoundly disciplinary notion of understanding. And they define understanding as to making connections and binding together our knowledge into something that makes sense of things, whereas without understanding we might see only unclear, isolated, or unhelpful facts. But the world also implies doing, not just a mental act. A performative ability lies at the heart of understanding. To understand is to be able to wisely and effectively use or transfer what we know in context, to apply knowledge and skill effectively in realistic tasks and settings. To have understanding means that we show evidence of being able to transfer what we know. When we understand, we have a fluent and fluid grasp, not a rigid, formulaic grasp based only on recall and plugging in. What they're trying to get at is that education is not about memorizing silos of information or data or propositions in history, in English, in physics, in mathematics. It's about understanding those propositions, that knowledge, in a conceptual way and being able to apply that to the real world and to use that knowledge effectively, productively, generatively in understanding their experience. Okay, this is a framework that they have developed. I don't have the time to pursue this now, but this is a framework that they have used in their professional development work in the United States that has been immensely successful and very powerful. It starts off with questions about, you've got to start in curriculum design with the core question, what is worthy and requiring of understanding? Not what's in the syllabus or what's in the textbook. What do I want to teach today? But it requires a hard-edged question about what's worth knowing. And that's the toughest question you can ask teachers. In fact, this is the question, and we know this from research we're doing in Singapore and the research has been done in America. This is the hardest question for teachers to answer. Now, that's a real challenge, I think. They've really got to make judgments about what is important to know for young people to know and do. And it requires a really deep conceptual understanding of their subject matter, a disciplinary understanding. And that's where they start from. And then you start thinking about, well, how do you know they know it? How do you measure? What is the evidence of understanding? And then you start thinking about strategies. The traditional way in which teachers are taught to teach is that you start with learning outcomes or objectives, then you go to instructional practices, and then you worry about assessment. This changes the logic. It changes the sequence. It's a very, very powerful way for getting those core questions out up front. So I'll leave that with you. This is a kind of a template for work that we did in Singapore that kind of exemplifies how you might measure the disciplinarity of what happens in the classroom. You can see there's a taxonomy of knowledge, depth of knowledge, knowledge manipulation, and knowledge criticism. And you can see under each of those there are kind of three standards, or four standards. And we find that in Singapore, Teachers do extremely well on basic factual and rote knowledge, on reproduction, and on truth. That is, by truth we mean what the teacher says is the truth, or what the book says, the textbook says, is the truth, as opposed to engaging in comparison and critique of truth, or in the case of knowledge manipulation, of engaging in interpretation. The figures for those bottom scales items in Singapore are very low, both primary and secondary. So Singapore teachers do extremely well on basic factual knowledge, on reproduction, on truth values, but they do much less well on those other items. We're using this now in PD work with teachers. They use this to self-assess and to assess each other in schools, and it's having a very significant impact on the understandings that teachers have of the disciplinary depth of their working classrooms. So it's worth considering. This is, if you like, the enacted curriculum. That's the data from this. This is actually the intended curriculum. And here I want to refer to work that Rob Gilbert and McLeod did, and they reported to you earlier. What they found in looking at the intended curriculum, and you're all familiar with this, and I'm not going to dawdle on this, is that basic information communication skills account for almost half of all of the mentions, and then thinking skills. That's good. But deep learning and knowledge came in third at 12%. In knowledge-based economies, that's not good enough. You need basic information to think well and to do deep learning, but you've got to have the others up there as well, so you'd want to see greater parity. And then on down those other items. Now, we're doing a lot of work in Singapore at looking at what does a knowledge-based economy require of workers? What are the kinds of skills and capacities that employers and the labour market expects? And it doesn't look like this. And the work that's been done in the United States by the National Research Council doesn't look like this either. So these are very important issues for thinking about how do we prepare young people for the knowledge-based economy work sites and the kind of social and technical organisation of work that's characteristic of them. Okay, this is from Anderson and Crathwell. Peter, I've talked about this. Again, I'm going to skip through this pretty quickly. They draw a distinction. This is based on Bloom's taxonomy of knowledge. They draw distinctions between factual, conceptual, procedural, and metacognitive knowledge. All of these forms of knowledge are required for disciplinary understandings. You've got to know stuff in order to understand and use the stuff well. You've got to understand it at some level of depth. And so conceptual knowledge is critical. And that's where schooling in the United States, in Singapore and Australia, in my experience and the work that I've done, that's where it's weak. Particularly in Singapore, because of the power of the national examinations, the focus is on getting the kids ready for the national exams. So there's huge amounts of drill, immense amount of drill and practice. And so when they go into their exams, those kids are drilled up to their eyeballs. They are incredibly competent and efficient in applying the algorithms that they've learnt to the task at hand in the assessment. And that's why they do so well. One of the reasons they do so well. So that kind of basic factual information about propositions or about algorithms is important, but you've got to go beyond that. And this is a helpful framework for thinking about these issues. So what are the virtues of disciplinarity? There are many. The one that I think Peter used a passage from Anderson and Valente in his presentation, and he talked about a kind of the tension between, or the marriage, the reconciliation between the pragmatic and the epistemic. And he had a particular quote there that I went and followed up. And it's a sense of practical regime into an economy of conceptual enterprise. I found that an immensely kind of interesting thought. And I've been thinking about how we might use that to understand the relationship between academic and vocational knowledge, for example. And if you think about it, that idea allows us to transcend most of the binaries that divide curriculum design and curriculum development. And I've listed some of those ways in which if we think about disciplinarity, it's not something that's academic knowledge. It's the ability to understand a particular process and to understand it conceptually and to be able to manipulate or change or measure or apply it in some powerful and consistent way. And that's what disciplinarity is about. It's not about more academic knowledge, more canonical knowledge, more theoretical knowledge. It's about bringing them together in the real-world context. And that's the challenge for, I think, for education in the 21st century.